Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of a team that still has the best record in Major League Baseball, that of course leads the American League East, and that has won 75% of its games and every series it has played through this point. Those are, of course, the New York Yankees. Whipple, there's a lot to get into about another winning week in which the Yankees won two series, but before that, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a good week for the Yankees. I think today's game left maybe a bad taste in many people's mouth, but I will say that the fact that they were in the 10th inning to begin with, when they had already swept the first two games of a doubleheader, which is really hard to get a doubleheader sweep, when they're facing a really good closer down by one in the ninth and came back to even get to the 10th inning. I mean, maybe our attitude would be different if they were 4-12 instead of 12-4. But I have a hard time finding fault with, you know, little things around the edges when the bulk of this team has just been so good. And against, I mean, the Marlins, not the most impressive team, but I think each of the other three clubs that they've played have been really good in their own right. And or other four clubs they've played have been really good. And I'm just excited at what we're seeing every day. And even, you know, even in the down moments, I feel like there's things to be excited about. But, you know, no team is perfect, but this is as good of a start continued as we could have hoped for. And it's just a really good energy around the team. Like I texted you, I mean, extra inning games on the road are really hard to win. And you can find fault with what happened in the 10th inning, or you can look at all the positives from the game to get to that point. And in the context of the rest of the weekend, I just feel like it's an unequivocally positive week series. I don't know. I mean, it's just good right now.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with the way the Yankees have played. And I was worried that we would end up kind of focusing too much on how today's game ended in the course of this podcast, as opposed to focusing on just how good the Yankees have been thus far. Like, you know, their run differential is plus 21 right now. I want you to take a guess at what their run differential was in all of 2023.
Plus 19.
Try again.
Plus 15.
Was try it again.
Negative 10.
It was negative 25. They scored 673 runs and they allowed 698. If we look at Picota's refresh from, I believe this is from this morning, they're projected to score 810 runs and allow 691. So just a resurgent offense year over year. And, you know, obviously a lot of that is due to it being composed of different players, but some of it isn't. And that's where I'd like to start with Anthony Volpe. You know, you and I exchanged some texts over the course of this week about things it turned out we were right about. And I got to give you your flowers. I was not sold on leadoff Anthony Volpe, and he's been phenomenal. He's up to 1.3 Fangraphs WAR on the year. He has a 211 WRC plus. He's walked more than he's struck out. Obviously, he's far outperforming his ex-WOBA, you know, by over 100 points, and his BABIP is 432. So regression will come for him, but talk about a guy who has completely changed his profile as an offensive player from one year to the next. Not, and it's not just in the, you know, strikeout rate and walk rate and the slash line. You know, if you dive into the plate discipline metrics, I believe these are the ones from StatCast that I am citing on his Fangraphs page. Chase rate, outside of zone swing rate, down from 32 to 25%. He's also swinging less in the zone, which I think is part of why he's been able to do more damage. He is making way more contact in the zone. So when he's choosing more selectively to swing at these pitches, he's making contact with them. He's hitting them hard. Like, you just got to love what you see there from Volpe. Obviously, there are parts of it I don't love. You know, he came into this game with a 2-1 ground ball to fly ball, but he also increases line drive percentage by over a third, or about a third, 21.8 to 28.6% year over year. So he is making the best kind of contact, line drives, more often. He's not pulling the ball a ton, but I think going up the middle as much as he had has helped his batting average on balls in play, which again, like, will regress. And then if you just look at the quality of contact he's made, his average exit velocity is up like 1.5 miles an hour. Obviously, he hasn't really barreled the ball a ton yet. I think he had one coming into today's game, but his hard hit rate is up year over year. His expected stats have improved year over year. So I'm really excited about what I've seen from Anthony Volpe. And, you know, you caveat this with all of the small sample, we've seen him be good in 15 games before, et cetera, all of that. But I tend to be pretty skeptical of the idea that, oh, a guy's hot, so you move him to the leadoff spot, he's going to stay hot, whatever. You nailed it on this one. And I don't know if that's a repeatable skill, but it was definitely the right call. And it's been really exciting to see Anthony Volpe succeed in that role.
You don't a repeatable skill for me to get things correct?
A repeatable skill to identify that a guy is in a hot streak and will continue to be in one, so you should change his role.
I just feel like with Volpe, the reason, I mean, let's not forget, like, he was elevated to the leadoff spot like very quickly in his major league career, and that was not a good move. Like, not, he should not have been in the leadoff spot last like April 15th or whatever. But yeah, I think it's indicative of the fact that, like, he has the skills that make him good for the leadoff spot, like the stereotypical skills, but he also has this ability, which we're seeing. Like, I think what people want Volpe to be is like a lot worse than, like, or what they wanted him to be in leadoff is a lot worse than the current Volpe we're seeing.
Yeah.
And I mean, the difference, the interesting thing for me is like the fact that he's not pulling the ball as much and that he is going to all fields, because he's always been, I think people have this vision that he's like been this all around, like all fields hitter in the minors. And he really wasn't. Like 2022, I think he had similar like pull rates kind of across the field, like opposite field percentage, as he did in 23. So this is definitely a different approach. But I think like his bat to ball skills combined with, more importantly, in my opinion, his ability to hit the ball hard, his ability to run, his ability to get on base, like the contact part of being a leadoff hitter is overrated. But if you're going to have a guy who has the wheels plus can hit the ball hard and has the eye, I mean, the discipline we're seeing on him right now, like it would just, you know, the ability to hit singles, it would be nothing without the ability to do what he did in the ninth inning off an 100 mile an hour Emmanuel Class A fastball. I mean, that's like the difference maker for me, is somebody who can be a legitimate threat where he knows he's going to get pitches to hit because he's hitting in front of Soto and Judge. But unlike, I think, some other guys who people want in the leadoff spot, DJ LeMahieu, he has the ability to turn and do damage on those pitches and does it quite frequently, at least this version of him. So I feel like the underlying skills make him a good fit, but it's like he's taking it to that second level where if he's going to hit, you know, even a third of what he's doing right now, I just think you got to leave him up there. And genuinely, I feel like that's what's going to happen. I mean, again, he hit leadoff like 3 weeks into his major league career. The Yankees have wanted him here for a while.
That's
true. If this is going to be Anthony Volpe, I think we should all be really excited for it. And
to be clear, this is not going to be Anthony Volpe.
Sorry. What, like, you know what I mean? Not this as in what he's currently doing, but like if these tools are
this real, profile.
Yeah. This profile is real. And I mean, we could talk about Gleyber Torres, but I'm just the biggest advocate for him hitting cleanup. Like, I think once he's right, he should go into the cleanup spot. And that to me is as good of a top four as you could hope for. So I don't know if like this, I don't know like how much of this is sustainable, probably not as much as people want, but it's there and a lot of it is real and it's really exciting to watch.
Anthony Volpe, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Alex Verdugo, Austin Wells. What do all of those hitters have in common as of today for the New York Yankees?
Walking more than they strike out.
Walking more than they strike out. For the Yankees to have that many guys walking more than they strike out, I think that's really cool because the lowest walk rate in that group is Volpe and Verdugo at 15.2%. Like, that's an unbelievable frequency with which to walk. And it comes through in the team batting stats. You know, they have a 354 on base this year. There were long stretches of last year during which the Yankees didn't, as a team, have a 300 on base percentage. And it's translated into a 127 WRC plus, which is second in the American League. Funny enough, to the Houston Astros, who can't prevent runs for their lives. The Yankees, of course, lead the league in walk rate. Like, it's just really exciting to see the offense be this successful. And I know I cautioned people about the batting average on balls in play stuff at a player level when you're evaluating the performance of a guy like Volpe or like Oswaldo Cabrera. But overall, their BABIP is in a very normal place. It's at 289, which is 18th in baseball. You know, this isn't like they're the Braves who have a 131 WRC plus, but a 366 BABIP. Like, this is, you know, on the topic of Volpe, for example, like, this profile that the team has put forth is sustainable for a good offense. And I think we should be really, really excited about that. So go ahead.
And I think the Yankees of the first four games, as you know, you said, like, if that was what they were doing for all season, things would not be good, because that team, I mean, the first four games were great, but like, it was built a lot on, you know, good batted ball luck. But we've seen what we knew the Yankees were going to provide is, you know, some power shows. Like, that's what you sign up for. And they're more than capable of doing that. I mean, even today, you know, you have multiple home runs throughout the weekend series. I just thought the most impressive game, it was the game I watched most of, but I think kind of puts the walking or how much they're walking into context. I thought Saturday night against McKenzie, clearly McKenzie like doesn't have the best command, but I just thought it was a great example of how the lineup wears you down. Eventually they have the guys where they're going to make you pay, and you know, Juan Soto 3-run home run, that's making you pay. Like, that's what has to happen for this lineup to be successful. It's not walking in singles and sac flies. It's, I remember the spring training game where, you know, it was like walk, 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 Rizzo grand slam. That was kind of like what I feel like happened Saturday in Cleveland. It's get guys on base and then hit the big blow to drive them in. Maybe they haven't been doing it as much as we'd like, but they have the ability to do it, and they've been doing it enough to win 75% of their games. I feel like there's even room for improvement here, because I just don't feel like the guys who are underperforming, I think, are going to they're going to increase their performance by more than I think the Volpes are going to come back to earth. And no matter what, the approach that they have by getting these hitters who can, you know, take pitches, get on base, but also have the ability to hit home runs. Like, when you have conversations about this stuff, both those things are key. It was actually funny because, not to go completely off topic, but Morgan went to Red Sox Angels on Saturday. And so she was like, it was first inning, 4-0. She was like, wow, like, small ball really works. So I was like, oh, really? Let's look at how they got those runs. Tristan Casas, 3-run home run. She's like, well, they had to get on base for him. And I'm like, yeah, but them getting on base means nothing if he doesn't hit the home run. So, like, I would rather have them all hit solo. But the people who think that never understands, you would rather have everyone hit a solo home run than people just take a bunch of walks, because at the end of the day, you got to drive them in. And the Yankees have the guys to do that. I mean, it is a great, fun, cool, exciting, all the positive adjectives offense to watch. And it's because I think they kind of blend every part of baseball that people want to see.
Yeah. So the Yankees, you know, in spite of their slow start to the year from a quality of contact perspective and buoyed by their on base ability, are fifth per the latest StatCast update in ex WOBA as a team, There's some concerning things. Like, I don't like seeing the Yankees in 17th in barrels per plate appearance. I don't like seeing the Yankees in 17th in barrels per batted ball. I don't like seeing the Yankees in 13th in hard hit, 13th in the average exit velocity of their top 50% of hardest hit balls. Like, but then again, as you know, multiple people have pointed out, as the Aaron Judges, it's funny to say this about Aaron Judge, whose WRC plus I think is starts with 1.4 now. Yeah, 1.42. But as the Aaron Judges and Gleyber's Torres of the world start to, you know, rediscover how to be the offensive players we know them to be, I think some of that quality of contact stuff will improve. And as I said, if they're doing this all with a 289 BABIP, like, it will be hard for me to argue that we should be skeptical of their performance because it's based on batted ball luck, because it's not. They have hit multi-run home runs, which are very important and should be prioritized. Now, what I do want to talk about that I think is one of my favorite takeaways from the beginning of this season and does have some luck mixed in is the performance of this pitching staff, because oh my gosh, the Yankees have been elite at run prevention. They're one of just two teams with an ERA that begins with a two for their whole staff. Have they had some good, sorry,
does that include today's game?
Yes.
Cool. They
have had some good home run per fly ball luck, which, you know, happens. That will regress at times. I think it regressed a little bit today. They've been a little too walk happy and not quite strikeout happy enough on the pitching side, which I think is regressing as, you know, guys start to get more swings and misses. You know, we saw Clark have a good strikeout game on Saturday. Clay Holmes is striking guys out. I just am blown away that they have pitched this well without Gerrit Cole, without a number of weapons that they expected to have in the bullpen. As I said, you know, the ERA estimators put them closer to 4 than to 3, which is fine because I think some of the trends that we've seen aren't really going to stay the way they've been. But like, holy cow. With, you know, Cody Poteet and Nick Birdie and Caleb Ferguson, who, you know, wasn't good today, but has generally been good, and Victor Gonzalez and Clark Schmidt and Carlos Rodon and all these guys whose performance was by no means guaranteed, pitching so well so frequently in the absence of Gerrit Cole, like, I really expected, let me say this. I expected this team to be good, and that's well documented. But I expected them to kind of crawl toward the point at which Gerrit Cole could return and then get up and run from there. And I don't know what the next 50 or so games or however much time it's going to be until Gerrit Cole returns will go. But I do know that they've banked 16 games at a 750 winning percentage. And those games can't be taken away. They're not going anywhere. And the better they can do while they, you know, and build this cushion in the absence of Gerrit Cole, in the absence of MVP level Aaron Judge, in the absence of all-star level Gleyber Torres, in the absence of DJ LeMahieu entirely, in the absence of Austin Wells with normal human being batted ball luck, like, that's huge because we know that there are things that are not going well today that will improve in the future. And I just think we can't understate the role of this pitching staff in getting the Yankees to where they are, because it's not like, you know, they have a good WRC plus, but it's not in any way like the Yankees are lighting the world on fire from a run scored perspective. You know, the Dodgers, who have played more games, have 93, but like the Brewers have 91 runs. The Braves have 91 runs. The Brewers and Braves have only played 14 games. So, like, the Yankees aren't doing anything crazy offensively, but they're also one of just what, five teams that has allowed 58 runs or fewer. And for the run prevention to be that strong from this crew immediately out of the gate, I think we should be really, really happy about what we're seeing there.
Yeah, I mean, I probably was, I don't know. I just feel like we've talked about, but I trust the Yankees on pitching and you trust them on offense. And I feel like my extreme confidence from this year comes from seeing an offense that I know can deliver the goods, where like I kind of always like feel like the pitching can deliver the goods. I know that wasn't necessarily the case last year, but in the bullpen, I mean, it was. And it's kind of been the same story this year. Like, they have just assembled a group of guys who can get weak contact, get balls on the ground. Like, we're seeing the value in that strategy. And yeah, it didn't work out today, sure. But like, the one that didn't work out, it didn't not work out because the strategy was bad.
Yeah.
And for all the times it doesn't work out, it works out 10 more times in key situations and close games to get, again, a 750 winning percentage. I'm a little bit concerned about the low strikeout rate of the bullpen, just because it's tough. Like, they're pushing it to the extremes, and I would like them to start missing more bats. I would like that to like eventually rise, but I feel like weak contact is never going to hurt you with a ball over the fence. And that's like, I mean, that seems like simplistic, but if you have a bunch of guys who are getting the balls on the ground, like, that's a really good strategy for late close games. The Yankees, you know, Caleb Ferguson, Victor Gonzalez, Dennis Santana, like Birdie coming in, Hamilton, I mean, and Canely comes back. These are all guys who do not give up like lots of home runs. I think it's really cool that the Yankees are just like spamming this, like, throw your best pitch, you know, sinker, sweeper, balls in the ground, like, over and over and over. And it just keeps getting better and better and better. And maybe this might be their most impressive performance, just because.
And also cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Like, they're doing this with no-name guy after no-name guy after no-name guy. I continue to remind people, Ian Hamilton was just some dude.
Yeah.
Like, he was just some guy. And then he became one of the best relievers in the sport. Clay Holmes, just some guy, one of the best relievers in the sport. And I kind of feel like it's going to happen with Nick Birdie, too. He's ridiculous. And yeah, sometimes he like can't find the catcher's mitt, and that's how it's going to be, but he's electric. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think it's definitely concerning that they're the only team with a bullpen strikeouts per nine under seven. I would like to see that improve, but again, like, they get this weak contact, this ball on the ground, producing a low BABIP, like, in a way that makes a lot of sense, because, you know, ground balls don't get through that often. And sometimes they're gonna, and that happens, but man, has this been impressive. Whipple, on the topic of the relievers on the Yankees being really good at suppressing home runs, could we talk about two world famous home runs that we saw on Friday evening?
Should I start or should you start?
Please go ahead.
All right. So, As people know from Twitter, we tend to enjoy when we frequent the baseball stadium. You know, we love to play when the ball goes off the bat into the air over the fence. What it's commonly
in fair
known
territory that is
in fair territory, the home run, the world famous home run. And so, Everson Pereira, not a guy who's hit a lot of home runs in the majors. Gary Sanchez, a guy who has hit a lot of home runs in the majors.
That's true.
Our combined task was to split up and, you know, divide our forces and go try to witness these elusive or maybe not so elusive events. I headed down to Norfolk. I saw the Scranton Rail Riders play the Norfolk Tides. The Norfolk Tides, who were having monster world beating, you know, can they beat the Oakland A's and Chicago White Sox kind of season, until they got swept in a week-long series by the Rail Riders. So I'm just going to leave that one there. But it was super fun. Did not see Jackson Holliday because he was off in some other city playing, but saw all the Orioles prospects. There was a massive jet stream out to left field where Kobe Mayo and Heston Kerstad, especially, should not have been a home run. I feel bad for Will Warren. Like, it was It was a pop-up. It felt like a pop-up, and it just carried out to left. Mayo's were a little bit better, but one guy who did not need the jet stream because he had his home run to dead center was Everson Pereira. And as everyone knows, we always like to joke on Twitter, maybe this will be the time that Everson Pereira hits the world famous home run. And you know what? This was the time. I know he's done it more in the minors, so it would have been cooler if it was the majors, but to see Everson Pereira hit a ball over the fence and to see him jog the bases, I felt like, you know, as the people who are at Roger Maris hitting 61 or Aaron Judge hitting 62, I felt I was witnessing history. And I, with my limited cell reception in like some small corner of Virginia, I texted Will the picture of him rounding the bases. But little did I know, concurrently, something just as crazy was going on. And this is where you
come in. What's nuts to me is when I saw your text that said he did it, I thought you were talking about Gary Sanchez because I had just seen Gary hit his homer. So I went across town to Oriole Park at Camden Yards, aka OPACY, aka Camden Yards. And I was going to see the Orioles play the Milwaukee Brewers. And, you know, there are just some like bit guys that I really like on the Brewers. I like Bryce Terang because he allowed me in cahoots with Brian Wu to name my fantasy baseball team Wu Terang Clan, which I'm quite proud of. I like Jake Bowers, obviously, Rake Barrels. It was unfortunate that he didn't appear in Friday's game, but he would, of course, homer on Saturday. I like Reese Hoskins, aka Rice Hopkins. I've always been a Devin Williams fan. I think he's cool, but of course, I was there to see my favorite baseball player of all time, probably. I was at the game and I was like, yeah, this is probably my favorite baseball player of all time. That would be one Gary Sanchez, who came into, oh yes, here we go. See, this is why people... Yep.
He still hasn't gotten it. Soon, he'll get it, but...
This is why people got to watch the video version of the podcast, because that's amazing, and I'm excited to sport that at future Brewers games. I was there to see my favorite baseball player of all time, Gary Sanchez, play. And, you know, I hadn't seen Gary in a game since, I think I deduced it was 2019, because I only went to one game in 21, and it was the day that he was put on the COVID IL. And he, of course, was not a Yankee in 2022. So I go to this game. And in his first plate appearance against Tyler Wells on an 0-1 count, Gary hits an absolute laser of a no-doubter home run to left over that BS tall, poorly placed wall at Camden Yards, 434 feet, over 111 miles an hour on exit velo. And I was the only guy in, you know, 100 yards of where I was who was standing and cheering. My Orioles fan friend who was at the game was disappointed, but you know, couldn't really say anything. It was truly a terrific experience to see Gary Sanchez hit the world famous home run in his first plate appearance that I had witnessed in 5 years. And it was, of course, his first hit of the year. So pretty exciting development for Gary Sanchez there. And I can only imagine that that's something he did because he knew that I was in attendance and that, you know, just how special it would be for me to witness that from him. I would assume so.
So this is the second time a former Yankees catcher has made you exclaim emotion at a Orioles game by homering.
Is the other time when Kyle Higashioka, who was a current yes. Yankee at the time,
well, okay. Former now. Okay.
Former fine. Now. Yes. Former now.
But that's, I'm very happy for you. Thank you. As someone who has seen my favorite player pitch a lot, I know the exciting feeling you get when he does, you know, your favorite player does a good thing when you're there. But I think in your case, you know, you hadn't seen him in a number of years and you just don't know. I mean, Gary could have gone 0-for-4. You didn't even know yeah. if he was going to play, but he played and he gave you that memory. And I think wearing that shirt is going to, it's going to hit different this year, knowing that says another hot Gary summer might be upon us.
I think it might be hot Gary summer. So I checked my spreadsheet because, of course, I have a spreadsheet for everything. And I went to a game on July 29th, 2017 with my grandparents and my sister and my parents. The Yankees played the Rays in a game that they ultimately would go on to win 5-4. And Gary Sanchez hit a home run off of Blake Snell. It was July of 2017, the last time I saw Gary Sanchez hit a home run in person. I could not legally drink. Aaron Judge had like 40 career home runs at that time. He has 260 now. That's 220 Aaron Judge home runs went by in between Gary Sanchez home runs that I witnessed. And it was just for us to have put out there that our goal for this game was to see both Everson or these games rather was to see both Everson Pereira and Gary Sanchez hit world famous home runs, and they for them to do it. I mean, that's incredible. And I think we have to, you know, seriously interrogate, what does this mean for us? Like that we have this ability or this power, this control. What does that mean for the way we need to engage with the sport of baseball and with the games that we attend? And how can we best be stewards of this ability?
I mean, I know you're just discovering this, but I already won Cole Cy Young last year. So,
oh, I forgot about that. That's a great point.
But this was kind of your prediction. So I don't think it was like a Whipple-Domus prediction quite in the same way.
Yeah.
But we did manifest it. And, you know, I don't know which one was more rare, but I feel like the fact that we had these two kind of memes going, or these two storylines, we merged them into one on the same night. And it's actually fine, because I wasn't going to go Friday. I was actually supposed to go Saturday, and like it was a last minute switch.
Oh.
So yeah. And then I think they won like 2-0. I don't think Everson Pereira homered. So fate intervened, you know, the universe put this together, and it's definitely in this young baseball season one of the highlights. And I think that's the cool thing about baseball. You know, it's a little town in the, you know, middle of Virginia, a major metropolitan area in Maryland, the same game and the same cool things happen. And Gary Sanchez and Everson Pereira, they're connected in history by this moment that neither of them will ever comprehend or know.
No, my goal is that we get to tell one or both of them about it at some point.
I just want Everson Pereira to hit the world famous home run in like real base. Like
if Everson Pereira hits the world famous home run in Major League Baseball, that will be extremely exciting.
He hits
the ball unbelievably hard. So it'll happen at some point. We'll see. When is that? I don't know. There's not a lot of room in the Yankees outfield. You know, it might be in Sacramento for the Athletics, but, you know, we'll see. Is there anything from the games this week, aside from the 10th inning tonight or this afternoon, that you want to discuss, something that you feel like we didn't address sufficiently? I think the takeaway here has been, we're happy with the offense, we're happy with the pitching, but a little skeptical of portions of it, and we're very pleased that the Yankees are 12-4. If we agree on that, which I think we do, unless there's some specific thing you want to highlight, I think we should talk about the events of the 10th inning here on Sunday.
Let's just talk about the 10th inning. Because you said that, and I was like, the 10th inning, and you say except for the 10th inning. So I think that answers the question.
So let's talk about the 10th inning. The Yankees were walked off by the Cleveland Guardians today in the 10th inning, preventing them from having a 5-1 week and demoting them to the lowly 4-2 week, which I would note is still quite good.
The world famous 4-2.
The world famous 4-2 week.
I'm just going to do that with everything.
You should. I think it would be great. So
world famous 10th inning.
The infamous 10th
play inning. Extra innings.
you 1873, the advent of the curveball, you know, you steal a base.
Never.
Baseball's never always stole. Rewarded deception. Anyway, if you get that, shout out to you. Shout out to Batting Stance Guy as well. So the 10th inning started off great for the Yankees. Soto was the zombie runner. Judge was unintentionally and then intentionally walked. Stanton had an infield single that he legged out thanks to his blazing speed that betrayed him earlier in the game. And then Rizzo ripped a ball down the line to right field that scored two runs. And then stuff got stupid. So Gleyber Torres sacrifice bunted, moving the runners from first and second to second and third. And what I tweeted at the time is basically, in so many words, if you think the third run in this inning is really important, then the bunt makes some sense because it increases your probability of scoring the third run. It decreases your probability of scoring the fourth run, the fifth run, and so on. But it increases your probability of scoring the third run. If that's what you're playing for in this 7-5 game, then the bunt makes some sense. But the Yankees have been snake bit by one thing in particular this year, and that is, of course, the ground ball double play. With through today, so including the stats compiled today, the Yankees lead baseball with 20 double plays. They're the only team with more than 18 and one of just two teams with more than 16. And that is a bad thing. And they managed to ground into an extremely stupid double play. Alex Verdugo, in fact, managed to ground into this extremely stupid double play. A 3-2-3 double play. And I don't know that he could have beaten the ball back to first base. I think he probably couldn't have. But the shot of him jogging down the line and then turning back and then realizing he needs to run harder and not really having any idea what's going on was really, really, really frustrating. And I said it, I don't know when I said it. I don't remember if it was today or yesterday, but another day of baseball, another slew of reasons for players to make less contact. And Alex Verdugo grounding into that double play, ending an inning in a plate appearance that began with two runners in scoring position and one out, was really, really disappointing. And you've kind of converted me on the bunt. I'll let you make your argument. But in hindsight, at least, I think I should have been more skeptical of the decision to bunt.
Did you, if it was anyone but Gleyber Torres bunting, would your answer have changed? Be honest with me. If it was Alex Verdugo bunting and Gleyber Torres grounded to the double play, who are you blaming for that inning?
Well, you're blaming the guy who grounds into the double play.
Okay, fair. But
like you cannot put the ball on the ground in that situation. You're better off swinging and missing.
All right.
Make your case. Yeah.
We were initially discussing, and the minute he bunted, I knew shit was going to go down because
yeah,
I just feel like extra innings on the road, your goal has to be to make this game unreachable. Like, I do not support playing for one run when you know you have to go back out there and pitch with a runner on second, Jose Ramirez, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And without Clay Holmes.
Without Clay Holmes. I just don't feel like the best strategy is taking the bat out of Gleyber Torres' hands. I don't think bunting in any situation is good. Like, yeah.
Here's the situation, if
they were at home and they needed to win.
The situation in which you bunt is you are the home team. There is a runner on second base. There is nobody out. And you need exactly one run. That is when you bunt. So clearly, their belief was, if we get this third run, the game's over. But I think you're right. If you have to go back out there in extra innings without your best relievers, knowing that Jose Ramirez is coming up, you need to get all the insurance you can. And one text that you sent to me was, I think Gleyber Torres needs to be swinging in that spot, and I would rather see him hit than Verdugo ground out. And I think that, like, sums it up really well. And my response was, I don't like bunting, and it was very much not a step on their throats move to give away an out in that situation, which is exactly what you're saying. Like,
yeah,
it was a sacrifice in the truest sense of the word to have Gleyber bunt in that situation. And then like, obviously infield in, you know, trying to cut off a run at home. Verdugo has, like, you know, pretty average, but that should be good enough speed. You're not thinking that a double play, obviously you've taken the conventional double play out of order. You're not thinking that a double play will find a way to manifest itself, but because it's Alex Verdugo, there it is. Also, I just want to make clear, I took a lot of crap from people in the first game on Saturday for Trent Grisham grounding into two double plays. Are we acting like Alex Verdugo hasn't now grounded into six? Is that what we're doing? Because people, I took a lot of crap all week for saying I would bench Alex Verdugo, which I still might. Like, after today, his ex Woba, I'm pretty sure, is going to start with a two. So, like, that sucks. And he's addicted to grounding into double plays. The Yankees have grounded into 20. He's grounded into six. He's only 1/9 of the lineup. He should not be grounding into 30% of the double plays. And he has. And I am tired of it. And for him to do that in that situation was just so incredibly frustrating. And I cannot stand the way that he refuses to hit the ball in the air. Okay.
I just think it was karma from bunting. Like, you're,
but you could be right. It might be true that regardless of who came up, that was going to happen because they stupidly gave away an out.
Right. Like, you should be able to protect a 2-run lead on the road, but, like, that's really hard in extra innings when you already have a runner on second. Like, that affects everything. I just think winning extra inning games on the road is so hard. And the Yankees realized that last year because they lost, like, every single one. Yeah. And we saw earlier in the year, like, that was a battle to win that one game. You're not going to, I just don't think you can ever be comfortable protecting a lead in extra innings on the road, given the way the current system is set up. And the Yankees got cocky when they had bases loaded and Rizzo got a single. And then they were like, all right, we're going to get one more. And then we're fine with a 3-run lead. You know what? Like, I would rather have Gleyber Torres grounded to that double play than Bunt and Verdugo on it, because at least, like, they were going for it. I just hate the, we're going to play for that one run and now we're going to play scared. It's like NFL overtime. You know, like, you don't want to send the game to overtime if you're the road team. You just want to win it because you don't know what happens in extra periods on the road. Like, I'm sorry. It, like, maybe, I mean, in NFL, like, maybe that's more of like a vibes thing, but in MLB, there's specific rules that make that a not desirable outcome. And the Yankees, I said, should have, you know, I would not be comfortable unless they had like 5 runs, but they really, I think that was very foolish and they got the karma that was coming to them. Don't bunt. Yeah. Like, it's not good, except for maybe that one situation, but, like, I don't know. Like, the Yankees of all people have the lineup that can, Gleyber Torres of all people has the bat that can hit the ball. Well, I know he's not doing well, but I still would rather see him. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, taking the bat out of his hands to give it to a ground ball merchant was, it sucked. Right.
And it's just like, I just think it's the mentality of like, oh yeah, like, we know by doing this, he can at least record a productive out. Like, no, there is no at least. Like, stuff goes wrong in baseball all the time. Even when you don't have a ground ball merchant up, you have to maximize your outcomes. I'm just, like, really annoyed by that. Like, I don't know whose call it was, but I'm really annoyed.
Yeah, it was weird.
I don't think Gleyber was bunting on his own, though. I think it was called.
I agree. And it was extremely weird not to play for the highest possible number of runs.
Yeah.
And that bothers me. And maybe they'll learn their lesson. And hopefully they don't have to play any more extra inning games, period. They just win all their games and they do it in regulation.
Agreed. But on the last thing is just, like, I think to be in that situation takes a confluence of outcomes. And I feel like they tried to push their luck a little
too far. I agree.
The baseball gods do not reward bunting. That's the lesson.
They don't. They never do. So we got pretty negative there. There was, you know, there was stuff we didn't like and we called it out. And I won't go on a whole rant about Alex Verdugo because, actually, no, I didn't promise I wouldn't be negative about Alex Verdugo. I promised I wouldn't be positive about Trent Grisham for very long. So I could. So you're welcome. If there's anyone out there who doesn't want to hear me go on a rant about Alex Verdugo, I could, but I won't. And you're welcome. I want to give you the current projected win-loss record for the Yankees by three different projection systems: the Fangraphs playoff odds, the Fangraphs depth chart, projected standings, and Picota. And I want you to tell me which one you think is closest to the record they will finish with. The Fangraphs playoff odds have the Yankees winning the American League East at 91.5 and 70.5. They give them an 89.1% chance to make the playoffs and a 53% or 54% chance to win the division. The Fangraphs projected standings put the Yankees at 92 and 70, and they don't give those percentages. So we'll just have to live with 92 and 70, which is 80 and 67 the rest of the way. And Picota has them at 95.2 and 66.8 with a 95% chance to win the playoffs and or to make the playoffs, a 62% chance to win the division. So 90.5 to 95.2 and divisional odds between 54 and 62%. Who do you think is closest? Where are you putting it after these 16 games?
I think that the win total for the... Sorry, I forgot which one was the 95, but I think 95...
Picota was 95.
I'd go with Picota win total, but I don't know if that's enough to win them the division. I mean, I think like my preseason thought was like they were like 92 to 93, and I feel like that's bumped up by like three.
Yep.
But it also usually takes more than 95 to win the AL East. And I do feel like there's going to be an Orioles run. I mean, but then again, to be fair, the Yankees are playing so much harder teams than everyone else right now. And they're still doing this. So like, maybe, I don't know, maybe this is like the cushion and, you know, the AL East winner, like will have like 95 to 96. I just assume that like it was going to, I mean, I know it's still close, but I just assume that like it's always going to be a dogfight. Like it's not going to be 2022. But I think like having said that, I mean, yeah, I this Yankees team's true talent based on these players, based on how they're playing, to me, it's like 95 to 96. It'd have to go back a little bit to be 90 to 91. I don't know. Like I know projection systems aren't inherently conservative. So maybe like the correct answer is like, I support the one that's like in the middle versus like on the upper end. But to me, 95 also seems like what my expectations are.
Yeah, I like 95. I think, yeah, to your point, if you thought of the Yankees as a low 90s win team at the beginning of the year, and then they play 16 games of 750 ball, you know, suppose you thought they were a 90 win team. That is a 555 winning percentage. 555 winning percentage over 16 games is 9 wins. So they outpace that by 3. So if you think they're going to play like a 90 win team for the rest of the year, then your win total expectation should be 93 wins. So if you thought they were a 91 or 92 win team, you're probably at about 95. So I think Picota's totally chill. I think what I will say is Picota has the Yankees at 95.2 and then the Rays at 87.6. So that's an 8-game margin in the division, basically. The Fangraphs playoff odds have the Yankees at 92, basically, and the Orioles at 86. That's a 6-game margin in the division. So they're both suggesting that the Yankees, you know, division position is pretty well established, you know, both have it as more likely than not that they'll win the division. And obviously these things can change dramatically over pretty short periods of time, and I'm sure have done so since the beginning of the season. But I think it's, you know, it's a nice place to be. I think where I keep coming away with these first 16 games is it could have gone so much worse and I would have been fine with it. Like if the Yankees had played these games at 9-7 or even 8-8, I think we could totally have talked ourselves into, look, well, you know, guy A is going to get hot and guy B hasn't turned it on yet. And, you know, if they just play at this level or a little bit better until Gerrit Cole comes back, they're positioned really well. Or, you know, just wait until the schedule is not so difficult. Like, there would have been a million explanations for why they looked kind of middling or average over these games. And the bottom line is they haven't.
Yeah,
they've hit really well and they've pitched really well. And even if there's a 16 game stretch in the future, or even if it's the next 16 games in which things don't go very well, these 16 games of 750 ball are banked. And I could not be happier about the fact that those are there. You know, it doesn't matter when you win the games. It doesn't matter how you win the games. It just matters that you win the games. And for the Yankees to come out of the gate 8 games over .500, feel pretty good about that.
I mean, it's Juan Soto. Like, it's not just Juan Soto, but this is the effect that getting a Juan Soto and adding him to a very good team has, is it's a hedge. And when other stuff doesn't go right, you are elevated to a higher level than you would have been. Like, I know it's, again, not all just Juan Soto, but like, if this team did not have Juan Soto, you're a few wins short of where you are now. And I think that's pretty clear to say. We said it before, like, the Yankees didn't have to move mountains to get to where they want to be because they got Juan Soto. And I think we're seeing that play out in real time. Like, yeah, Anthony Volpe's taken the leap, but like, other guys have fallen back. I feel like everything else kind of is, you know, some the usual, like, these guys are good, these guys are bad. But Juan Soto being a generational player, is there's no counter for that. Nobody is playing just as bad as Juan Soto is playing well.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I feel like we spent, you know, this is season 4 of the Yankees Files era, which is crazy to say that on its own.
That is insane.
But I feel like a lot of the story of the first 3 seasons, or, you know, large parts of the first 3 seasons, was kind of looking at reasons why things might get better. And eventually, I feel like you just got to win the games. And I feel like the Yankees right now, they're just like winning games. Like, they're just going out and winning the games. It doesn't matter that everyone's not playing at peak performance, but because they brought in, you know, they have the hedge of Juan Soto, they have the great pitching set that they've had, and their offense is just getting the job done. I mean, that's not really analytical, but I'm glad to not have the conversation, at least for right now, of like, well, you know, do you really think this player is going to be this bad, and this player is going to be this bad, and this player is going to be this bad? And like, it went on. And I know 2022 first half was great. I mean, I think people who are saying right now, and you're out there, because I've seen the, oh, I haven't felt this way about a Yankees team in a long time. Like, 2022 first half felt like this. Like, don't lie.
Yeah, absolutely. It felt better than
better
this.
Better than this. Yeah. Like, maybe, you know, you didn't have Juan Soto, but you had, like,
wasn't that team 30-10?
The team was like 50-18. I mean, they were 60. Like, so there's a long way to go. I don't think the wins and the losses are indicative. I think this team is definitely up there, but like, what I feel like this team does have is like, it, you know, like it has that similar to first half of 2022, where like, everybody, maybe not everyone's playing at their 99th percentile outcome, but like, every day they're just going out there and winning, and you have a lot of guys playing really well. Like, don't give me the BS about how, you know, the 90s Yankees just found a way to win even though no one was very good. Like, good teams find a way to win because they have a lot of good players. This Yankees team, up and down the roster, just deep with good players, and they got Juan Soto. And those are the two things I keep coming back to. Just really fun to, like, have this conversation and not have to point out every guy who is going to improve. Because you know what? Like, Juan Soto is already as good as he's going to be, and I think that's pretty cool. And Aaron Judge is going to get better. I mean, that's like, that's not
Aaron
even
Judge
that
and Gleyber Torres are going
to
get better, which is really exciting. So, right. And they're going to get Gerrit Cole back, et cetera, et cetera. So, Whipple, it's kind of a challenging week coming up with the road series in Toronto beginning on Monday evening, and then an off day Thursday, followed by 3 games hosting the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend. It's going to be hard to, you know, remain undefeated in series. It's going to be hard to have another winning week, but I hope they do it. And let's roll into confidence. You've been steadily climbing What did you see from another winning week against the Marlins and the Guardians?
I mean, I'm going to stay at a 9.5 or go. I always forget if I'm here now. I'm at the 9.5 now. I don't know if I went up.
Wherever you were, you're at the 9.5 now.
Yeah, I feel like I just kind of talked about all the reasons I'm confident. But yeah, I think there's obviously like some things like for me, like I want to see this bullpen start striking out more guys.
Yep.
I would like to continue to see Carlos Rodon pitch well and start to bring that FIP back in line with ERA. I want to see more from Anthony Rizzo. It's definitely lazy to just say he has CTE when he is getting garbage throws from across the diamond, but I would like to see him do a little better. But at the same time, like I'm not super concerned when the guys who are on the field are on the field, because there's just such a collection of talent and there's really sustainable and great things to like about this team. And I think the biggest thing is like, it's early, but there's just the American League's open. I feel like it is open. Like the Astros have fallen off to this point. I think the Orioles are going to be the biggest challenge, but the Yankees can play with any of them. Like it's past the point of like trying to match up. Like, I feel like I'm like talking to my kid. I'm like you know, just go do it. Like you're good at the sport. Like, you know, we've practiced in the yard. You've played rec ball for a lot of years. Like you could beat any of these people. Just go do it.
It's so awesome.
That's how I feel about the Yankees. Like I just feel like they are good enough. And I hope they continue to show us that this week. Especially, I mean, if they can beat the Blue Jays again and really get an advantage in that head to head, and then like, don't let the Rays come in with a bunch of mediocre players and do whatever they do, because like, just don't do it.
Whipple, do you remember when we were watching the now 6-time, but then 2-time national champion UConn Huskies, go Huskies, play in the 2011 Final Four against Kentucky at my house?
Mm-hmm.
And on the last play of that game, Shabazz Napier had just put UConn up 4, 56-52 with 2 free throws. And Kentucky, with like 2 seconds left, threw the ball the length of the court. Josh Harrelson caught it. I believe he threw it to Brandon Knight, who made a 3 as time expired. And UConn won 56-55. And we were like feeling weird about celebrating because the other team had just made this shot, and we were like, well, what do we do? Like, this is what do we do now? Like, UConn's going to the national championship. This is awesome. But like, I don't know how to react. Like, I don't want to celebrate another team making a shot. That's kind of how I feel recording this podcast. It's like everything is going so well, but they're coming off this like heartbreaking extra innings loss on the road that deprived them of a sweep. And it's like, man, like it just feels so weird to be celebrating right now. So I think I've been at 8.5 with my confidence. I'm going to remain there. You know, I got to, again, leave headroom for when Aaron Judge finds himself, when Gleyber Torres finds himself, when the bullpen starts to miss some more bats, when, you know, Carlos Rodon and Clark Schmidt and Marcus Stroman and Nestor Cortez continue to give me reasons to be optimistic. You know, I want to leave room for all of that. So I'm going to remain at an 8.5, but I could hardly be happier with what this team has shown to this point. And this is something that I've tried to convey in a few tweets, like having concerns about the process with which you produce results does not invalidate how you should feel about getting those results. Like Oswaldo Cabrera is wildly outperforming his ex-WOBA. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be happy about what he's done to this point. We shouldn't appreciate that he has helped the Yankees win multiple games. We absolutely should, but we're allowed to be nervous about how he may perform over the rest of the season. And, you know, those things that we talked about, not seeing MVP level Aaron Judge yet from Aaron Judge, not seeing Gleyber Torres yet from Gleyber Torres, not seeing the bullpen miss bats, you know, Carlos Rodon and other starters walking too many guys and getting in some jams and letting a bunch of base runners on. We can appreciate the results that the Yankees have gotten to this point in spite of those things and still express concerns about how those things will play into the arc of the rest of the season. So while I could not be happier, or I could hardly be happier about how well the Yankees have played to this point, I do have some reservations and some things I'm still looking out for that are keeping me at an 8.5, but after last year, to be this confident in a team this early on and to see them getting such good results is just really, really nice.
Yeah, I got to add, I think to the process over results thing, or, you know, you can like the results without liking the process. If they had won that game, I would have been kind of pissed because I really didn't like that bunt. So that maybe they got rewarded or they got punished for that, but they're going to get rewarded down the road because they're not going to do that again. Right
now. I hope not.
Like my kid talking to my kid at like rec league, but yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think the biggest thing for me is like this feel like, I feel like the feeling that we have coming off the last year, like the vibes turned around so quickly and I'm going to bring in a picture again without him even there. And he was the vibes last year. Like he had him and like Glaber, they had the only vibe on the Yankees.
Yeah.
So you know what? Like for me to be this confident without him there, I think it's going to be a good summer. I am optimistic, cautiously so.
It's going to be a hot Gary summer. For any audio only listeners, Whipple is holding up a Yankees magazine with Garrett Cole on the cover.
Yeah.
All right. That wraps things up for us. Whipple, any parting shots or were those them?
I'll give a parting shot also to Caleb Durbin because he really impressed me. Like I snapped you and friend of the pod, Ryan Garcia, a close up picture of him, but he was hitting the ball all over the field. And if he keeps hitting like this and the Yankees have room in the infield, I'd love to see him get a chance later in the year. So that was my minor league thoughts. Will Warren looked good, but got hurt by the long ball. Everson Pereira hit the world famous home run. Oh, also ABS, the automatic ball strike challenge. I was intrigued by it. I mean, I'm not going to go into a ton of depth, but like, I kind of liked it. Like it wasn't used too much to disrupt the play of the game, but it got some bad calls. Like it's reversed them in key moments, but it also did like sometimes it was challenged and they just confirmed the call. So it was kind of like with the current replay, it's not 100% success rate. I was a fan. So assorted minor league thoughts, ABS, Caleb Durbin, good. Everson Pereira, world famous home run, good. Wind in the air to help Orioles hitters hit balls out, bad.
Noted. Thank you.
Wind in the air.
And right. That wraps things up for this episode of the Yankees Files podcast. You can keep up with everything we do at yankeesfiles.com. You can follow us on Twitter where we are at Yankees Files. Podcasts are available wherever you get your podcasts. We hope if you like them, you'll rate, review, subscribe, download, do all that stuff. We hope if you don't like it, you'll just like listen to it a bunch of times. We don't need your negative reviews. Thank you. That's going to do it. You can podcast is available with video on Spotify. And the entire video version of the podcast goes up on YouTube where we are at Yankees Files. We'll be back similar time, similar place next week to recap the week that was against the Blue Jays and the Rays. And until then, let's see the Yankees hit more world famous home runs and let's go Yankees.